Welcome, listeners, to the Top Hat Topics podcast. I'm your co-host, Jen Snyder.
And I'm Kristen Hughes.
And we are here to talk about all things Gentleman Jack and Ann Lister. So, for all our Lister sisters out there, we're going to be doing 8 companion episodes to go along with the show. And then after that, if everybody's enjoying it and we're still having a good time, we'll discuss more things Ann Lister. We'll go into some of the characters a little more and maybe even speculate on the season 2.
To come.
Yes.
So before we get started going through the episode, we do want to let everybody know that we do have an email address set up for the podcast because we do want all of your honest feedback. And we also are going to start a weekly ritual because we think it's important to get the community involved with such a beautiful story that means so much to so many of us. Well, we'd like for everyone to write in and nominate a Gentleman Jack in your own life. And our intent is to read through all of those emails and pick which one touched us the deepest, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's what she said. A little office humor for you guys there. So, yeah, we want to hear about the Gentleman Jacks in your life, and we want to pick one every week and announce it here on the podcast and read the story to all the listeners. And we even plan on sending you guys a little certificate just to let you know that your community recognizes you as a mover and a shaker. So with that being said, I believe that we are going to move right along into talking about episode 1.
Absolutely. And really quickly, I just want to mention this, that I think the reason that, well, especially Kristen and I, we both really, really, really identify with this character, Ann Lister, is because we are both Gold Star lesbians. I don't know if this means the same thing across the pond, but it means we've never slept with men, so we only love and only love the fair sex. But we want to let everybody know that this podcast is not just for our lesbian listeners. It's for everybody, everybody on the spectrum, even men, anybody who loves the Gentleman Jack show or the Ann Walker story. This is for everybody. So we're very inclusive. Even your Gentleman Jack nominations, they don't have to be a woman. If there's a man in your life, a Gentleman Jack man that you think needs recognizing, let's go ahead and do that. So we just want everybody to know that this podcast is for all our listeners, for everybody that loves Gentleman Jack, and for all the Lister sisters out there, even the male ones.
Yes.
So
you do not have to have a vagina to be a sister.
No, not at all. All right. So we're going to go ahead and start with the episode. We're going to hit play and we're going to talk about it as it goes. Now, you don't be able to listen to it, but if you want to sync it up at home, we've just hit play on it. We're slowly coming into Halifax. What a beautiful place. Like, how did they even get these shots for this?
I don't know how anywhere was that beautiful that early in the Industrial Revolution.
No kidding.
That's just incredible to me.
And then just starts out with horse guy going way too damn fast. No respect. And a boy holding a chicken like we do.
As we do.
And a baby up front, you know, no safety precautions, just the baby right up front of the carriage.
No car seats. I think the first time we watched this, Jen mentioned that we can't see this man's face, but we know he's bad.
That's all you need to know. You see the black carriage. You see his devil-may-care attitude, laissez-faire. And this is the first time that Ann Walker sees Shibden.
There's something already just pulling her in.
And then, of course, the aunt takes this moment to talk some mad shit about the Listers.
Yeah, they don't have visitors. Mm. Like, I don't know, maybe they just don't like petty people like you, Auntie.
No, it's because they're a bit odd. We know what that means. All right, so here's the big moment that starts the whole show. Like, no one saw his face.
No one.
It wasn't a car, honey. These are horses, okay? They weren't going that damn fast. Have a look-see.
You did not have a tinted windshield.
And you know what's sad, y'all? Both of us, the first time we saw this episode, we both had the same reaction. What happened to the chicken? What happened to the chicken? Is the chicken okay?
Did the chicken survive?
No, they ate the chicken for dinner.
Were their chickens harmed in the making of this film?
What'd they do with that leg? I mean, I know they don't want to waste. We know they ate the chicken, but what did they do with the leg? Okay, never mind. I digress. And then we got
Yara Greyjoy. She's in this show? My goodness.
And she's already trying to, you know, she's putting out the fire like Ann Lister would. Well, she gets very mad when people mention that later, and I just love that. Yeah,
she doesn't. She's not a fan of the fact that she is always in Big Sister's shadow.
Also, and, they give her the most ugly. This dress, she wears this like two or three times in the series, and I think it's just the most hideous tablecloth dress I've ever seen in my life.
I'm pretty sure that print was actually called Modest Ass Woman.
I'll have 7 dresses made in the Modest Ass Woman style. It's by far my favorite. Match my bonnets, because everybody knows a modest ass woman has a sweet ass bonnet.
And so, to match her modest ass dress.
It's a modest ass dress print. And so they're immediately, and I love, this is like one of my favorite parts of Gentleman Jack, how they have already started talking about the main character, and we have not seen her yet.
We have not seen her at all.
No
clue. All we know is that there's some really interesting sibling rivalry, so she must be a badass.
Yeah, because she's already mad. She's already jelly that they're comparing her to Anne for the way she handled things.
And poor Anne Walker looks like she's never had a drink in her life. God bless her sweet soul.
Also, I love how everybody just kind of wingmanned Anne Walker. I mean, Anne Lister to Anne Walker.
Right.
Like, she doesn't know anything about her.
Straight out the gate.
She's smart.
Straight out the gate.
Yeah.
Oh, you're alone? You have money? You're not married? You're a blonde?
I know, and I really kind of love how they capture that babe in the woods look for her right there. Like, she has no idea what she's about to get into as everybody's wingmanning her lesbian would-be partner.
Just like a sweet little deer in headlights.
She has no idea. This is a great show, and so many, their facial expressions are probably my favorite part about this show. They capture those small little nuances where they're not even speaking. You know, it's simply just a look or a gesture, and it is so profound and well done. Like her Anne Walker the whole time, where she's getting these sheepish, coy little looks as they're explaining Anne Lister. Spot on, am I right?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. They're all such incredible actors, and I would say that the best part about this show are the subtleties. It's not what's right in your face. But I'm going to stop saying what I'm saying so that we can talk about the very important credits.
I love the way they do the credits. Like, I love the little hook for the shoe. What is that stick that she's sticking down the front of her corset thing?
That is a whalebone busk. It was a pretty well-known addition to a female wardrobe during that time period.
Oh, was it a well-known addition? More like a whale-known addition. No idea about that. You know so much, Google. Oh, and I love whoever pointed out the Lister in her eye.
Yes, and do you know that is really carved into a window at Shipton Hall? They can't prove that she did it, but it is carved into a window at Shipton.
And she totally did it. We're just saying that. We don't know. And here we go. We're about to see our title character for the first time. What a fucking entrance. Am I right? I'm sorry to use the F word, but seriously. Like, just running into town, hell on wheels, literally.
No fucks.
No fucks given or received, as it were. And, like, you just know something awesome is about to happen as soon as you see this carriage and you see her bouncing up and down. What a powerful entrance. I'm sorry.
I mean, just this woman immediately telling people what she requires and just completely unbothered by the fact that she just came flying like a bat out of hell.
Into town
in a carriage.
And this part particularly, now I'm a butch woman who doesn't date other butch women. That's my personal preference. But this scene, the way she squares up to this man, it's sexy. It is pure sex. I'm sorry.
I mean, amazing. It really is. And I think that the whole thing about her is that no matter how you identify within the realm of lesbianism, I guess I'll call it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really hard call with her. Like, do I want to be her or do I want her? Or is it both? It's very confused. Now, here she goes, breaking the fourth wall for the first time. It is undoubtedly my absolute favorite thing about this. She does it often very directly, but also sometimes very subtly. And I love it in in any movie or show where they do it.
Well, see, and that's funny because it's actually a pet peeve of mine. I hate when they break the fourth wall. It's never done well. But this show, they do it perfectly. And I think we talked about it before, how you were saying that it's her diaries. And I think that's the nod that they give to it.
Exactly. Like, it's their way of showing that she is telling her story to us.
Yeah. And they don't do it so much that it messes with the story. I feel like they do it sparingly enough that it's just right in its sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's something as simple as just, an eyebrow raise or a look at the camera just to let us know that she knows we're still here.
And we're watching.
And she's well aware of her behavior. Everything is calculated.
And I wonder too, like, who was she writing this for? Like, her diaries, they were just her own journal to be kept, because that's one of my fears. That's why I don't write things down. It's because I don't want people to read them one day. And it's like, did she know? Did she think that people would one day read it?
And I mean, I really don't know. I mean, honestly, I think that she did it more for herself. I think that she was a person of extreme mental capacity and mental processing. And I just think that it was her way of offloading some information so that she could function, to speak. But she wrote it in code. So to some degree, you might argue that she thought someone was going to read it.
Yeah. I love how the whole house is a tither as soon as she gets up. Everybody's up. She storms in like Chunky Cat, like, oh Lord, she coming. And everybody just freaks out.
I mean, I just want somebody to get that excited and that out of sorts when they know I'm arriving.
We talked about this before as well between us, that, you know, there was no television then, so a woman who traveled all over the world, that was the most exciting thing that was going to happen in that day. You're going to get some stories. You're going to get to hear some things, see some things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was probably the only person, not only in their family, but in their entire social sphere, especially as a woman, that, you know, had any sort of interesting facets of her life going on and to share with people. I mean, she was an adventurer.
Yeah, and traveled the world. And that was, and I love how much her aunt loves her. Like, that's one of my favorite parts, is her aunt.
We stan Aunt Anne.
Yeah. And here's Eugenie pulling up at the footman. I want a footman so bad. I mean, let a bitch get rich and famous.
Right. I want a groom. I want some footmen.
I want to be sending wax sealed notes to ladies, you know, by footmen.
Exactly. Miss Hughes requests your presence for dinner and dessert.
Dessert. Okay. Anyways, yeah. What a great, just the way these actors are portrayed, it's a fascinating look into something I never thought I would be interested in seeing, if that makes sense.
I totally, it's really the subtleties. Like, you don't know that you need something until you get it.
Yeah, that one little part there where the sister takes the butter first after she takes the lid off. It's those little nuances that make this show so great.
And is that not the epitome of their relationship?
Yeah.
I mean, just take as many liberties with each other as possible.
Yeah. And open the butter, but you're going to get that butter first, girl. This is half my butter, Anne. You do not forget that half of this butter in Shibden Hall should be mine.
And I'm going to have a son.
Getting ahead of him.
Sorry, guys. That was just a little preview for a later episode. But important nonetheless.
Absolutely. And the way she talks about everything, I think that's my most favorite part about her character, too. She's so passionate. And that's what people love about her. That's why people kind of allow her to be who she is because she's fascinating. You ain't never seen anything like that, especially in 1832.
No, and she is definitely not without some extremely sophisticated manners. I mean, it's really hard to publicly
denounce someone
who is much much more sophisticated than you are, even if she is different.
Yeah, and I think that plays into the whole, that's how you know she's brilliant, because she is so vastly different in a time when it was detrimental for a woman to be that vastly different, but she's so clever that she's able to navigate people and almost kind of turn them in on themselves as to why they don't like her. because she's that charming. And I think that's what, you know, almost every gay person I know learns that skill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They make a way into your lives to where you have no choice but to at least have mutual respect. Yeah. And if you don't, you're the bad person.
Yeah. I think that's a training mechanism that gay people learn, or anybody that's different really, is that ability to maneuver through life with grace, and it detracts from other people's goodwill for them to be ugly to you. And that's a skill we have to learn. And here we go. She's about to climb up the wall. She's figuring it out. That her character is just unstoppable. There's like, that's what they want to portray that from the very beginning. There's nothing that she cannot do.
I mean, guys, this is literally actual footage of me my entire life, just hopping over that wall. And I mean, she's got all those petticoats on and everything. I mean, she found a way though. I mean, that is me in front of every structure that has been in front of me for the entirety of my life. Oh, there's a gate. Don't mind me. It'll be quicker for me to just hop over this fence here.
How she not hurt herself landing on that whalebone, though? I mean, I'm
very
just saying,
carefully.
Very carefully. You want to watch that whalebone. It hurts a little bit when you jump down.
She had lots of practice moving around with that whalebone.
I like when new women encounter her on the show, because it's either a mixture of just like absolute intimidation or like a small twinge of like desire. Sometimes we see women. I don't know. Maybe that's just me reading too much.
No, I absolutely. I think that it's intimidation in the way that they themselves are fascinated by the fact that they are alike in their sex, and they see this woman that has broken all the barriers of the rules. She doesn't follow the rules at all, and I think that it's a little astonishing to all of them, because they're bound by the same sex, and they can't even comprehend a woman that can make herself this autonomous.
Yeah. And then real quick, we got to stop and just say, what the fuck's wrong with that dude's leg? What is that? That shit looks gnarly.
You know, I have looked it up, and maybe they say it, and I've just, you know, missed it. And
or it's like dropsy. They call it dropsy.
I'm really not sure. I've looked it up. I don't really know. I'm thinking that he just had an injury to his leg, and it was just super infected.
It looked like Freddy Krueger leg to me. Old 1832 Freddy Krueger leg. You know how it happens. The gangrenous. And I like the medicine that they have next to them. Just looks like liquor bottles. Just a couple liquor bottles.
So one is the Irish whiskey and one's the brandy.
This one's got the morphines and this one's got the cocaines.
I take one in the morning and one to go to sleep.
Yeah. But even this man who's very sick knows to respect her and goes and gets what she asks him for immediately. Like, she's so commanding. And kind of up.
Oh, you're...
All right, so we now just found out that the lady maid is pregnant with the dead groom's baby.
And she's just told Collingsworth, is that her name? That, oh, well, you used to be her lady's maid. You know what she gets up to with other women. And she's just like,
I know, it's almost like, yeah, I know, but we don't talk about that.
You've already failed all the rules that there are to being Miss Lister's handmaid. You just failed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I couldn't figure out why she would kick her out if she found out about it. Is it because it was just so improper for a woman to not be married and have a baby out of wedlock?
Well, really, the truth of it is that Ann Lister was a hardcore elitist.
Yeah.
She felt that class was everything. And the truth of it is that she probably had no problem with throwing any of her servants or tenants out that didn't or weren't living the way that she thought was
appropriate,
which is super ironic. I mean, that's really the pot calling the kettle black there, Anne.
Can I just say, I could have lived without this whole sub-thread of the horse being sick.
I totally
except
understand.
For the one part,
look,
and we'll talk about that in a second.
Yes, I'm going to talk about what happens to this poor horse. I feel a certain type of way about, we'll get to it when we get to it, but I mean, I would like to say that I'm highly attracted to the fact that she's just giving this horse a full-on medical examination and using her little stopwatch to time his heart. And asking all these important questions to figure out what's wrong with the horse. And she just gently leans up against him, which tells you, I feel like the way people treat animals will tell you everything that you need to know about who they are as a person. And the fact that she just leaned gently up against that horse while she was checking on him.
It says a lot.
It tells you what a truly tender person she is.
Although she did just walk past that sweet, beautiful wolfhound and not pet him.
She did say his name, though, Argus.
That's so cute.
And he's the real star of the whole show.
Yeah. And here's Marion bitching. Always bitching.
Always bitching.
Oh, is she mad? Too? I like when she does her eyes down and she starts storming up the stairs. She's got something to say.
She might be the actual poster child for nagging. She's it. And then, you know, so they've already got this serious rivalry going on. And in every single breath, Ann Lister just completely proves that she's dominant in their relationship. But you've got to leave it to Marion to always slip in the gentlest of insults that seem to press the only buttons that Anne has, like right here when she says, did something go wrong in Hastings with Miss Hobart?
She has a very umbrella charm, you know, where she just pops up with some shade out of nowhere. You know, just so unexpectedly, poof, shade.
Shade, which is commonly referred to as passive aggressiveness, but they've given it a cool word now. So
also, this show has made me want to start sealing things with wax. I don't even write letters, but boy, do I want to want some wax and a press.
No pun intended here, but this show really sealed the deal for me on that as well. I mean, as if Game of Thrones wasn't bad enough to make me want to seal everything with wax, seeing Ann Lister do it.
Yeah, because she just violently.
She doesn't even look at it. In Game of Thrones, you know, they're being all artistic about it and gently putting their seal on it. And Ann Lister is just like, you know, it's like she was writing a howler, like in Harry Potter. Like she wanted whoever she was sending that note to know exactly how and what she was saying.
Okay, so I like that she's just coming now to tell the maid that her ex-girlfriend's come to visit.
Oh, yeah. Here she comes, Miss Lawton.
And the sleeping arrangements.
The same sleeping arrangements as usual. And this poor woman is just like, oh, my God. We just talked about this today.
And your sense of impropriety. Just going to have your ex-girlfriend come up and sleep up in your bed. I ain't mad.
Super casual.
Oh, man, this part, they capture what it is like to be rejected by women as a woman so well in the show. Like, it's painful in its poignancy. You know what I mean?
It really is. And it's so, it's hard to be rejected from anyone, but.
But because you're a woman and that being the only reason.
Exactly. Or just as a woman, being rejected by another woman it's a whole different level of insufficiency in your own mind.
Yeah, because it's something that you can't, you know, if I was less charming or not as learned or smelled bad, I can fix those things.
Exactly.
Girl, I can read a book. I can take a shower. You know what I'm saying? I could take a little charm class. I mean, I wouldn't, but I could.
Don't need to.
I'm just saying, like, you cannot, there's nothing you can do about your gender and having someone reject you for that when they seemingly loved everything about you but that. How fucking painful is that? Like, that is just the height.
Truly.
And this whole little moment, I mean, have you never run up on a girl talking to a dude? Have you ever never caught a woman doing something like this to you? Because I have.
I mean, big same.
I think that's why so many lesbians are like, this show, bitch, this show is my life. It's like, girl, you have never been born in 1832.
I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's just incredible to me. You know, in the past 15 to 20 years, they've really started to give us some. And I'll put some air quotes around this. You can't see me, but I'll say it so you know what I really mean. Lesbian content that you know, has kind of gotten really popular, and it's kind of started to be more of a regular thing on your TV screen or at the movies. And even though this is about somebody that lived almost 200 years ago, It is the most relatable lesbian experience that I have seen on television or in a movie ever.
Holler back. Like, true facts. Because, like, me as a chunky butch lesbian, I never felt like the L word got me. I was like, bitch, you got a whole show and ain't nary a fat butch lesbian there? Bullshit. That don't reflect lesbian life.
Except for the one that was really sad at the... in the Pride episode that said child, that gay pride is really gay shame.
Child, you keep bringing that child up and I don't even remember that bitch. That's how unmemorable she was. That's how little L word cared about representing my peoples. So I think, and even Ann Walker doesn't look like, or Ann Lister doesn't look like me in the sense that she's still very feminine, but you're right. This character I identify with.
Her mannerisms, her resolve, her experiences and the way that she deals with those, and as well as her courting methods. And,
yeah.
And I mean, just even right down to the physical part of it. I mean, they portrayed it was, they show it without exploitation.
Yeah.
And it's valid.
Yeah. And they make her, they make everyone around, they show her as intimidating, even though it's just mostly people around her being intimidated by her.
Exactly. And because, you have to, there is a difference.
Yeah. And that's the universal thing. People will always hate you for being yourself. And I think that's what really, you know, that was her saving grace and the thing that people hated the most about her. Like, that's what gave her her footing, is that some people admired the shit out of the fact that she was herself. Unabashedly, and then other people hated her for it.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, I would venture to say that the number one reason why most people hate someone for being themselves is because they loathe themselves.
Yeah, they
so
lack
much.
The power in themselves.
You know, I always liked the saying that a hater is just a confused admirer. And I think that's what Ann Lister's got.
Have you ever heard the quote that says, hatred is the coward's revenge for being intimidated in the first place. I read that on a bathroom stall, girl. Girl. Profound. Blew my damn mind.
At Art Bar.
Yes.
Shout out Columbia, South Carolina. If you're ever here, you want to go to Art Bar.
You heard it, Art Bar. Sponsor us. Send us some hats or some shirts or something. Anyways, my favorite part about this show, well, one of my favorite parts, is the loving relationship between her aunt and her.
I think that everybody in this world wants an Aunt Anne. Like, don't we all just deserve, like, that one person that's known us our whole lives that just loves us and wants the best for us?
And adores us, yeah.
No matter what. Like, they don't even care.
Especially every queer person, like, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she was probably the rock in Anne's life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and probably what saved her, because I don't think that she would have been able, you know, if someone hadn't taken her in and supported her being herself, how would she have survived that scenario? Yeah, she'd have been married off in another family.
I mean, she was extremely lucky.
Yeah.
Extremely lucky.
Yeah. And I think you and I have talked about this before, how I wonder if her uncle didn't leave her Shibden so that she wouldn't be constrained to a man like that, so she wouldn't have to.
Now, I don't know that for a full fact, but I mean, I'm, it's my understanding that to a certain degree he was aware of who she was and her lifestyle to a certain degree, and he just knew that, you know, there were no male heirs other than her father, and that she had the business mind and the dominance to handle it, and that Shibden would survive. I mean, they mention it, you know, in this episode even, that, you know, the house had been there since Henry V.
It's their ancestral home.
Exactly. It's the oldest home in Halifax. So.
Well, I like to think that he left it to her so that she'd be able to do whatever she wants. That's what I say in my head.
Yeah.
That's how I live it.
So here we go. At first you're like, oh, look at this beautiful canary in this cage. And then you're like, oh, creepy doctor, straight out the gate. No doubt about it. You don't even have to watch him creepily rub her hand. It's like as soon as you see him behind the canary, you know.
Yeah.
This guy is a stage 5 Chester.
I don't even know what a stage 5 Chester is.
Look it up, bitch.
Spot on. you instantly don't like this man. His demeanor is just... and the way he talks down to her and talks about her like she's not there while she's, you know, talking to her aunt. How infuriating that must have been in that time.
Honestly, the way that everybody other than Anne treats Anne Walker infuriates me. They all treat her because she's sensitive, she's anxious, she's very affected by everything in her world. I mean, in today's world, we'd call her an empath. Yeah. That's what Anne Walker was. And they treat her like there's something wrong with her. The use of the word invalid, just every time it happens, I see red.
Yeah, well, that kept confusing me, because when I think invalid, I think someone who cannot do for themselves at all. And this is a very capable woman who just had anxiety in 1832, which they had no idea what that was.
Well, everyone wanted to make it seem like she couldn't take care of herself so that they could have some level of control over all the money that she had jangling in those pockets.
And what's the deal with her? Like, that's her dad died and left her everything, and so she's the head of her household too, kind of like Anne.
Her parents died. Her and her sister had a brother, but he died on his honeymoon in Naples. And so her and her sister, inherited the family estate and the fortune and all that. But her sister Elizabeth married Captain Sutherland, and we'll get to that son of a bitch when we get there. But I'll just leave that there for now.
Oh, man. But I think that's cool that they have similar kind of backgrounds. You know, they're both at the head of their household. They both had a dead brother. Because didn't Anne have a brother that passed away too?
Oh, yes. Anne's brothers passed away. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And so here we see Thomas for the first time, right? Is that his name?
Yes. Thomas Soudan.
Yes. His character, he's so layered to me. Yeah, right.
He's so endearing. And he is layered. He's a person of immense responsibility.
And really good moral fiber.
To a fault. To an actual fault, and we'll get to that later, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I love how he brings over a dead rabbit. Like, that is some 1832 gift basket shit right there. I brought you a blanket.
My mother sent over some bits and pieces, which include...
And a dead rabbit.
A full dead rabbit, not yet skinned. Well, and a blanket that she'd like to get back whenever you're done with it.
Well, the fur is kind of like 1832 Ziploc, right? You know, that's how you keep it fresh. You don't skin it. You wouldn't bring a skint rabbit over there. That's like bringing in a cake.
That's not untrue, unless you had salted it already, in which case you could totally bring it over.
Okay, Google. Anyways.
Google or redneck? You choose.
Yeah. Throughout this podcast, I will refer to Kristen as Google, because she is the brains of this operation. She knows the most. I'm simply color commentary. Also, sometimes if she's really making a hard point, I'll refer to it as bringing out the conceptual map, because once in an argument about Game of Thrones, she actually brought up the conceptual map of the Godswood to make her point. So, what you're saying, Kristen?
If I tell you the blueberries are ripe, get a bucket.
So she's the brain. She's okay, Google. All right. I love the little story that Thomas gives him when he gives him the soldier. I think that's, I mean, how clever is he that he's written a whole little backstory for something he carved for a kid?
I think in addition to it just being super sweet, like you were just saying how layered his character is, it tells me that he's a very lonely person. He's making up stories and making up whole people that he's making with his own hands. And I think that the fact that he gave one of them away to that little boy says a lot about who he is and how compassionate
he
is.
You just blew my mind, because that was a whole other layer that I hadn't thought about to why his character would do that. But you're absolutely right. And he creates trustworthy character. You know, he creates these admirable men because...
Exactly. While at the same time, they're human. I mean, when he was describing that soldier's story, who he had named Jerry Greenwood... He said he's a bit of a rebel and a bit of a rascal as well. So he had this valiant story for him, but he made him human. He gave him flaws.
Good job, Google. All right, now we see Ann Lister going into the pub and immediately intimidating all the men there. Everybody respects her. Nobody gives her shit. They may give her looks, but, you know, the barman had her table ready. He knew what time it was.
And I just want to mention... as a woman from good Irish stock, I really want to be in this pub. Every time that I see this scene, I imagine myself sitting at the bar having a room temperature Guinness, and
child would be like some goat milk.
It's on my bucket list.
It's probably still there. And I love that they conduct business in the bar.
Well, that's the only place that they could get the men to meet at before lunch.
Oh, fair enough. And poor Thomas Outen sitting there like every child of an alcoholic dad, just scared shitless at what this man's going to do or say.
And ashamed. The shame.
I know. The way these characters really embody these people, because we talked about it before, how beautiful Susan Sarandon is. Is that her name? You know, Google.
Susan Sarandon?
Yeah, that's what it is. Is that her name?
Who?
Her.
No, that is not Susan Sarandon.
No, I was asking that you Saran what her name Jones. Was. Thank you. That's why I was.
But
trying to
you
ask
know what?
You.
I bet she'll take that though, because I mean, Susan Sarandon is pretty epic too.
You know what I was trying to say? Damn it!
Anyways, I think everybody probably does.
I think that she's a really, really beautiful woman, and the fact that they made her like a very beautiful, feminine-looking woman, and the fact that they made her so strong and manly in this is really kind of striking.
She's so androgynous.
Yeah.
She's so – all of her mannerisms and her idiosyncrasies are so feminine and masculine at the same time. I mean, she is the epitome of gender fluid or nonconforming to me. She's just – that's just who she is.
Yeah. And even the Southern character, the dad, he plays it to the hilt. He plays a belligerent, drunk asshole so well. Like, the condescendingness, the derision and the sneers. I mean, just – and she's not affected by it. Like,
completely
pay your money
unaffected.
Or not.
I mean, she really demonstrates how to – respond rather than react in every single situation
right.
She is in.
I love it. She just puts the pen down. Let me get around a table here. Let me get right up in your face and let you know what time it is.
You woke the dragon.
Mm. And then she kind of sniffs as if he smells bad to her. And then look at the people in the back of the bar like, oh,
they're like,
shit.
Oh, hell. That drunk has done caught the hell from Miss Lister.
And then she does not move. This is a thing that men make you do constantly in life, move out of their way. She made him move a chair
she
just to
made
get around him.
Physically move.
Yeah. So powerful. Just you can't mess with her. I'm sorry. This character is so strong and powerful. That's why people love her so much. That's why straight women, you know, are always on the Gentleman Jack board like, I don't know why I'm attracted. Because she's a badass bitch. And everybody's attracted to that. Gender, don't mess with badass bitch. You can also be a man and be a badass
That's
bitch.
That's true.
I mean, and that is sexy. People are drawn to that.
Badass bitch has no gender.
It doesn't. And it doesn't. And it's not even about your looks. And it's like this thing. And think about when you nominate your Gentleman Jack, they have to have that indomitable spirit for whoever you nominate, because that's what Ann Lister has.
That is exactly what it is we're looking for.
Yeah. I also love this character. He's one of my favorites.
Is he not the realist?
He is.
I mean, he never questions Ann. He respects her. And he's just an all-around decent guy.
You know, and I think that's when the thing we always talk about, your vibe attracts your tribe. Like, I think he sees the real in her. Like, their first interaction, they talk for a few minutes. He gets the measure of her, you know, when he asks, so are you the person in charge? Like, bitch, I'm just asking, who do I have to answer to? Do I have to answer to you or your deaf daddy? Because I need to know now.
And he seems impressed by every response that she has for him. He seems like, he's not bewildered. He's amazed.
It's like, okay, bitch, I see what you're doing. Okay, we gotta get. Them people been stealing your coal. I just wanted you to know that. I hope you didn't know that. Oh, you didn't know that. Okay,
and it would be best for you to just sink your own pit. I'll help you do it because they're stealing from you, and we're gonna run them out.
Saran just does a great job of just being commanding in every scene.
Casually commanding.
Just that arm laid over the chair, holding that sifter of brandy or whatever that is.
With a loose wrist.
Yeah.
Like she's not even trying.
It's so sexy. I'm
sorry. With the loose leg cross.
Yeah.
I mean.
Super cash. But I'm talking about serious shit, so pay attention.
And by serious shit, she means Saran Jones' hands.
I know. I was just about to say that.
If you, I don't care who you are, if you as a carbon-based sentient being do not recognize the pure sex that is Saran Jones' hands, I don't know how to help you.
I just want to watch her talk with her hands. Just gesture wildly, woman. Oh, and I love, she's always doing something with her fingers, rubbing the index finger and her thumb together, rubbing her finger against the wine glass like we like. It.
Always at the most opportune moments.
The subtleties of this character. And, you know, I wonder if that's the actor herself or if that's the director that put in all these, I mean, there's so many little small intricacies.
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I guarantee you that someone has posted a YouTube video where that exact thing has been discussed.
Yeah. I'm so pleased with how obsessed everyone is with this show. That means that we get to enjoy more of it. I was kind of worried when it first came out. I was like, oh, man, lesbian show. We'll get one season or, you know, something horrible, traumatic will happen, which, I mean, still could with this, you know. We saw Game of Thrones. We know what happens.
You know, HBO, I don't really think that's possible with Sally Wainwright behind the pen on this. I think their intention was that there would always be a little bit more, and I think they had planned for a little bit more, and it just sort of was a dream come true with getting that second season signed on.
A mad nod to her brilliance and her vision. Like, I mean, everything about this from the sets to the clothes. I mean, whoever their costume designer is, wow.
I would venture to say that every single person on the team that made this show or had any part in this show, they had to have been carefully hand-selected.
Absolutely.
I mean, they hit every nail on the head.
And just, yeah, I'm sorry. I could go on forever about the great sets and the great, and just how commanding her performance always is.
But let us take a moment to talk about her hair. I really don't know if I'd be able to make it with those curls on the side of my head. The bun, here for it. Lived many years of my life with the bun. Curls, good on you.
I'm always wondering how they didn't have curling irons. How the hell did they do that?
Magic.
And the subtle kiss of the neck and remembering those intimate moments. But
she
says no.
She tells her not to.
Oh, the rejection. Oh, and then she comes, kind of snaps back. And
I mean, she's physically ill. And can I just... has never been a better living embodiment.
Absolutely not. Of how well she just portrays all the feelings and the emotions and the pure sadness that comes with that, with being who you are.
And the fact that she's able to just, like, she has these flashbacks and these moments of vulnerability with it, but she, can you even imagine the energy that it takes for her to just continue on? She just goes through her day getting shit done, being a boss, because that's what Ann Lister does.
Yeah. She puts on her big girl panties and she goes to work and she handles it. Oh, and here we see the ex-girlfriend. Ba-ba-ba-boom.
Here she is.
Mm-hmm. A bitch named Mary, always breaking your heart. I don't speak from personal experience, but I do. Anyways. and the maid is just scandalized that kiss hello.
Accordingly is just, she's at a loss.
Yeah.
She's at a total loss.
She's
here.
Like, did she just kiss that bitch in front of me?
She did.
And so then, of course, you know, they had to have the family dinner, kind of keep up appearances. Mary,
and I
just stop staring at her like she's a piece of meat. It's very embarrassing.
She really is. I mean, she is really, I mean, I hate to say this, but I just feel like Miss Lawton is she's the female version of a fuck boy.
A fuck boy?
Yeah.
She's a fuck maiden?
She's a fuck maiden.
Well, she's married, so that makes her a fuck madam, right?
Touche. But, you know, I do, one thing I do appreciate about this, though, is that how casual Ann Lister's family is with her. Like, they all know
what's about.
They all know what time it is, and they're all just
talking
to her like she's part of the family.
They're all familiar with the sleeping arrangements. Okay.
Oh, they're,
they don't change.
We are all familiar with the sleeping arrangements.
The husband don't come, and we don't need a guest room. There's only 17 rooms in Shibden, and we got to keep it tight. So we'll just.
And here we go with the glass. One more time.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and the scalding looks. Mm-mm-mm.
That eyebrow, though.
Mm-hmm. She's like, you know what time it is, girl. You know what we finna do. And here we cut
here
to
we
what
go.
We finna do.
So this is the first love scene in the show.
And they're doing it in a real awkward position. I mean, how often do you do it? Big spoon, little spoon, hand around the front. I mean, is this some 1832 shit?
You might be surprised.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm speaking out of turn. maybe I'm just speaking for myself personally. It is kind of hot, though. I ain't gonna lie.
I mean, yeah. I think that they gave us just enough time in the episode that we were rightfully obsessed with her and then gave it to us.
And then she wipes her finger on the quilt like you do.
And, you know, I hear... Everybody keeps talking about that, but I don't care who you are. Say you don't do it, though. Say you don't.
I love it.
And then she clocks it on her pocket watch.
I love it. Sally was like, okay, Thren, in this scene, I'm going to need you to wipe your finger off with the quilt.
I mean, I wonder how awkward that was. Like, I mean... It was probably both awkward and hilarious. I mean, I can't imagine someone looking at me in a work environment and saying, now that you've just had that passionate love scene, we need for you to wipe your fingers off on the blanket and then document the experience in your diary.
Like you do after sex. What, you don't do that after sex? I've written down every moment. No, I'm just kidding. every ex-girlfriend's like, ooh.
This whole entire scene told us so much about how convicted Ann Lister is in herself. She will not even entertain the notion that she should marry a man and settle down and have a cover husband. And she's quite mad at Miss Lawton, who historically and in real life had been her longest and most prolific lover. So she really did know her best out of everyone. I super hate it when she calls her Freddie. I think it's a little condescending. But, you know, it could also just be that I don't like her face.
Well, what weirds me out about it, what I like about it actually, is when she says being married to a man would be perverse. I love that. I love
that. Isn't
that
exactly how it feels, though, Jen?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, is that not exactly how it feels? Like, the idea of sharing that level of myself with a man, there is nothing about that that feels natural to me.
No. And I love when she says, I want to share my evening hours with someone I love.
Someone who's there for everything.
Yeah. And that's what she's not talking about having sex. Like, she can bang women. I guess if she goes to Paris, you know, she can study anatomy, air quotes. But what she wants is a partner. What I think, isn't that like what every lesbian
that's what
or
it's
butch
all
lesbian
about.
Especially? Yeah.
That's really what it's all about. At the end of the day, it's not about sex.
It's not.
It's really not.
It's about that connection, and it's about that...
Your counterpart.
Yeah.
In whatever form that may be.
Yeah. That shared intimacy that you... I mean, I've never been in a male-female relationship, so I don't know about that with a man. But I know that, like, that intimacy, and they capture it really well in this show, I have to say. They get those moments to a perfection. But that intimacy is what people crave. And when I say intimacy, I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about those... quiet little moments where it's just you and another person and nothing else in the world.
That's what it's all about. And speaking of quiet moments, I'd just like to point out the way that Saran grabbed her by the face when she got stern with her. Hands up if you like that, ladies.
I'll tell you right now, I'll look you in your stupid little face when I say it. I ain't going to do that, okay? And then she kind of just shook it away. You'll be glad for that. Mm, wonderful.
So here we go, going back to this little cinnamon rolls home, and she's already completely enamored with the idea of Ann Lister, and Busybody Priestley is just beaming. You'd almost wonder if she herself loved Ann Lister.
Well, okay, and we can talk about this in further episodes, but the first time I saw this, I thought that. I was like, I think this woman has, I thought she was gay herself and almost identifying with something in herself.
I did too. I really thought the first time that we see her, I thought that she, like everybody else, was already wingmanning Ann Lister. That is really, really, really what I thought, because she's really that enthusiastic. I mean, you want to talk about conviction? This woman's got it.
Yeah.
When she talks about Ann Lister.
Ann's, haven't I, honey? I kind of like his character, though. Like, as far as men go, he's not the dominant one in that relationship. She wears the pants.
He's super precious. Yes. And he does his best to, like, protect. Well, we're not that far. That's later. That's later. We're getting too ahead of ourselves.
I like his character, suffice it to
exactly.
say.
Exactly. Mr. Priestley is a prime piece of man.
And I love Mrs. Priestley in this first episode. I loved how she talks about how it's an unfortunate for Anne to have been born who she is, but how she doesn't apologize for it. She just goes out and she is herself, and she admires that in this day and age. And it only, like, Ann Lister at this point to Ann Walker is like a myth. She's like legend.
The myth.
Yeah.
The legend.
Yeah. She's like folklore. Here we go again with this Freddy Krueger leg. I don't know what's wrong with these people. What are you brushing up against your legs with?
Well, we do know that Aunt Anne's are ulcers.
Oh, okay. How do you get ulcers on your legs?
I'm thinking maybe she was diabetic. I don't know that for a fact, though.
Good job,
but
Google.
Maybe. But here we go, creepy doctor again. But don't you think it's funny how he's way less creepy with the old lady?
Andy's a gossipy old bitch, and I love how Anne just puts him in his place right then and there. She does not go in for that shit, especially from men. She might tolerate a little something from women, but she will not from men, and I love that about her.
She's just not having it with him.
Nope.
I mean, pardon my French, but she knows in this moment that her dick is bigger than his.
Oh, yeah. She's got that BDE, and she's constantly throwing it around.
Oh, it's the most major.
Yeah.
It is the most major with her.
I love the aunt, too, because the aunt's kind of watching, and you can almost see it on her face. She's like, oh. And Anne's about to read you.
Anne's
down.
About to have you.
Yep.
Son.
Yeah. So she did, she's just like, oh, that was your fault, dummy. You did that to yourself. Anyways,
you walked
Anne.
Right into that, player.
Yeah. And I love how she just lovingly lays on her bed and starts rubbing her feet. I mean, they just have, there's so much love between these two characters, and it's apparent, and it's so wonderful and endearing.
Anne is her girl.
Yeah. And she's always got Anne's back, no matter what. And then, you know, here they are talking about how she should go befriend Anne Walker because she needs
needs a friend.
Here the aunt is. She is straight up telling her to go holler at Anne Walker.
And Ann Lister in typical some lesbian fashion is trying to be a super hard ass about it. Just play it cool, like, oh, Miss Walker, she's not a big deal, but here we go, ladies and gentlemen.
And the part where, like, they just let her know that Ann Walker's there, and the aunt gives her a look like,
I told you, bitch.
I said to go get a bucket.
As Joe Coy once said, I told you, Joseph.
So now, this is the first time she lays eyes on Ann Walker. And
look at that eye contact. I mean, you can tell. Those are two people that just fell in love.
I like to. She looks at her like, oh, okay. All right. I didn't know it was that. All right. Yeah, sure.
And Ann Lister's already got plans.
Yeah.
Girl, you come on over here with them big old puffy sleeves.
And she sits right next to her. And no one sits until Ann does. Everyone, that's how commanding she is. She's not the man, but it doesn't matter. She's in charge. Everyone knows it. They'll sit when she sits.
And I love how she just casually dropped the word sex, even though she was talking about being a woman, and looked directly at Ann Walker. That's some really beautiful psychology for you there. She knew exactly what she was doing.
Oh, yeah. And Ann Walker's already enamored. She can't take her eyes off of her. She's amazed. She's living up to the mythos that she's already heard of.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, really, is there anything better than hearing a legend and then it turning out to be exactly what you imagined it, if not more?
Oh, absolutely. And she asks her question, and then she doesn't let her answer. She likes to do that. She loves to do it to Miriam. She does it to Miriam all the time, and I think it's one of my favorite parts of the show.
Yeah, Marion just never gets to talk. And just in case anybody was wondering, we're going to call the print of Miss Ann Walker's dress Easter Bunny and Cotton Candy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. And then, you know,
they're talking about politics. In case you didn't know, Ann Lister was a fierce Tory. If you don't know what that means, go ahead and look it up. We'll come back to that on another day.
And speaking of big dick energy, here Ann Lister goes with just the biggest power move. Don't sit down. Don't get comfortable. Matter of fact, why don't you go look at my horse? Because I can see you making my lady friend uncomfortable.
TikTok, bitch.
I can't believe that part that she says that to him is just amazing.
Like, I mean, is that not the most condescending undercut you could ever give to a man, especially?
I know. He's just getting ready to sit down. And she's like, actually, no, you can go outside. I don't really want you in here. He's a doctor. It's a hard diss.
It's really hard. I mean, she really just let him know you're not welcome here. And do not look at my boo.
Yeah. And here she is sitting on the arm of the chair instead of another place in the house. She could sit anywhere, but no, she's going to sit right next to Ann Walker.
Oh, right next to you. I'm just going to lean in, just have a little bit of a height on you, and shout out one more time to Saran Jones' hands.
And the protective arm around her.
I mean, I feel protected, and I'm not even Sophie Rundle.
And then when she leans in, she's like, actually, sometimes I write about people I really like. Seduction.
Super casual, Anne. Super casual. Yeah.
Mad seduction. And here with the mad ego, I scarcely think she realizes she's in love with me already.
I mean, I just want to know where she learned that level of confidence from. I mean, to just, oh, you know, the last time we saw each other was years and years ago when we were basically children, but you're in love with me already. Let me just go ahead and lay the path to make you wifey.
She knows no resistance. She sees what she wants and she makes it hers.
I mean, you know, a lot of people say this is a stereotype, but this is proof that it's not really a stereotype. She's already wanting to wife her. Everybody knows the joke. What is a lesbian brought on the first date?
A U-Haul.
A U-Haul, always.
Or a carriage in this case.
In this case, it would be a rig.
And this, it bums me that they end this episode like this, because it's such a great first episode of the show. But I guess it's the kind of show that, like, there's literally nothing Ann Lister can't do. She's not a coward in any sense of the word. She's brave in the face of everything, even doing something that's unimaginable in a sense.
And you know, that's what I really think that this scene is all about. I don't even think that it's about the fact that she's killing this horse. You know, she showed this horse affection. She's cared about the horse. She wants the horse to get better. But even with just this look, she closes her eyes and she opens them and she has immediate resolve.
Yeah.
This is proof that Ann Lister is someone that's going to do the right thing, even when it is the hardest thing to do. She's a good man in a storm.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what redeems the fact that we're watching this beautiful horse get shot in the head with a sawed-off shotgun or whatever type of weapon that may have been.
And there's the fact that, like, Ann Lister kind of is because she is, because none of the men in her life really step up like they should. So she kind of has to. And she does throughout the series unfailingly.
Which just makes the patriarchy look even sillier.
So here she is, gay rushing, as you call it, away again with a gun in hand.
Always gay rushing. Always gay rushing. I mean, I think that Saran Jones has given It's made the lesbian walk cool.
Yeah. Oh, and then when she's walking up to Ann Walker's house, twirling that cane and that top hat. I mean, every butch lesbian that saw this show was like, I got to get a top hat. I'm going to look into a waistcoat and a cane. I don't care that it's 2019, excuse me.
I mean, I am not butch, but I am here to tell you, sister, I myself will rock that waistcoat, that cane, and that top hat.
I'm single, but when I meet my wife-to-be, I'm getting married in that top hat. She's going to have
I'm going to hold you
that.
To that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
In fact, I'll be upset if you don't.
And this face that she had when she asked for Ann Walker.
Coming back up on the last break of the fourth wall.
With the tiny little eyebrow raise.
You better make absolute eye contact with me and raise those eyebrows, girlfriend. I mean, that was one hell of a way to end the first episode.
Absolutely. And with that, we are all in love with Ann Lister, and we cannot wait for her to get into Ann Walker's pants, let's be honest.
I mean, you know, I hate to sound so blunt, but that's what it comes down to. We're all ready. We're ready for the gratification of Ann Lister getting what she wants.
Yeah. We're at the beginning of the chase. And oh, what a chase it is. So
and isn't the beginning of the chase the best part?
Absolutely.
In all aspects of life.
So you guys, that's the end of the first episode. We hope that you've enjoyed this companion episode to the first Gentleman Jack. Once again, this is Top Hat Topics.
And we really hope, you know, that you guys enjoyed it. You know, it's a rough cut. It's our first go at it. We want all the feedback. We really want this to be for you guys. We know that people are already laboring over rewatches and, you know, making fan videos. And we just hope that this is for you guys. This is something to add to your next rewatch. And we really want to know what you think. So again, our email address is tophattopics.podcast@gmail.com. And we do want to take this opportunity to remind everyone again of the weekly ritual that we want to make. We'd really like for everyone to email us and let us know about a Gentleman Jack in your life, a mover and a shaker, someone who is unapologetically authentic and
themselves
and a force in their own lives. And we really want to see those stories, and we're looking forward to being able to choose our first one in our next episode. So with that, guys, I think that we'll say thank you a lot, and we can't wait to talk to you on the next episode, which will be I Just Went There to Study Anatomy.
Thank you guys so much for listening. This is Jen Snyder.
And this is Kristen Hughes.
And we'll see you guys next time for the Gentleman Jack Top Hack Topics.